Well, Teresa, who are we going to look at today?
We're going to look at Keith Richards,
Yikes.
the rock and roll star.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a 3-6 manifesting generator. He's on the right angle cross of Eden, the quarter of mutation. He's a sixth color, right fixed, single definition, and unconscious 59-6, unconscious 35-36, electromagnetic 31-7, an unconscious 33-13, although the 33 is also conscious, and then that's all brought back together with that electromagnetic 46-29.
I'm not surprised that he can't get no satisfaction. He's a 3-6 profile. Six color. Interesting because there's this quality of innocence about him. And curious looking at that open splenic center, you know, about survival, about. And he has the 44th gate, fourth line, honesty. You know, that quality.
Well, he doesn't have any conscious definition. That's the other thing, is that, from this conscious level, he's a reflector.
No, talk about someone. Here he is to lead an experiential life. I mean, he has
Well,
three abstract channels.
and you know his he's I mean, one of the reasons that we were attracted to him, he was just on the Rolling, the cover of the Rolling Stone, and he's got his new autobiography out. It just came out in October, and it's called Life. I mean, here he's got the 11th gate, right? His personality sun, right? All these ideas about life, and then his actual experience of life. I mean, to me, a 3-6, 35, 36, unconscious, this is like a mother's nightmare to have a child like this, right? Now, this mother was fortunate because this kid was Keith Richards, right? I mean, he got really lucky in his third phase, really, of having something to be really focused on.
Well, that 11th gate, third line, internal renewal, you know, the survivor. And I think it's just so funny when you look at his channels, the channel of the prodigal, the 35-36 jack of all trades. When you think of song titles,
Well,
you know,
like
Prodigal
the
Son,
prodigal son is
Jumping
like
Jack
his
Flash.
father was always yelling at him, stop that bloody music. And finally, by 1962, when he, when they started the Rolling Stones, I mean, he was estranged from his father for like 20 years, right? I mean, he really was the prodigal son in that sense,
No, you look at this leadership that he has, you know, the channel of the Alpha. These are, as you pointed out, either design 35-36 or the 59-6. But you know, the Alpha, the prodigal, it's like he has this strong chart. Interesting too, no individual definition when you think about it.
No, he's very collective with this tribal, 59-6, and he talks about in his new book Life that, in essence, he's like a folk hero, and that there was sort of this script written. I mean, he hasn't done drugs for like 30 years, but he's the poster boy for drugs. I mean, he came out and did a spot, right, a public spot about, kids don't take drugs, and everybody was like laughing, right? And he's like, who's better to tell them not to do this, right?
Exactly. Just look at my picture. It looks like I'm totally zonked all the time. Well, you know, it's just to talk about that 3-6 profile. I mean, this is pessimistic, but it's just really such a survivor.
Well, he is, because I mean, he did more drugs probably than anybody in the period of time when he was doing them, right? And there's a couple of reasons that he at least claims why he's still alive, because as we know, many of his colleagues didn't actually make it. One, he really was taking pharmaceutical quality drugs. He had a guy that actually owned pharmacies, and so he took high quality drugs. But the other thing is that he knew that taking more didn't make you higher. He wasn't greedy, and it's interesting. He doesn't have the 27, and so he also, I think with this 59-6, this kind of sensitivity to what was going on, the 29th gate is about really, a preference for withdrawal, that he would get high. There's no question that he was high for a good part of the time, you know, in the 70s particular, but that he didn't go overboard. So he never OD'd.
Well, look at the Open Splenic Center, mm-hmm. you know, so he had this sensitivity to his survival and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, when you see 12 activations of the 12th gate, or 4 activations of the 12th gate, you know, the monk, the prophet.
Well, this one, the 12-3, which is, you know,
confession
about self-analysis. I mean, here he is, you know, at this point in his life, putting out his story, right? His whole life, analyzing, talking about why isn't he dead, okay? He's talking about
who
this.
Who better to do it than this 1333, you know, recounting this abstract process. You know, he could have match covers from every hotel they've ever stayed in. You know, or photo journal, you know.
No, you know what he
like
has?
That?
He has guitars.
Oh, really?
He has probably one of the largest collections of guitars. That's what he's collected. That and you know, different people's guitars, and, you know, I mean, so that's his collection, is of guitars.
Yeah. Well, right? This, you know, the right angle cross of Eden, you know. Eden's taken away from you, but it's about the ideas, history, the past, you know, and educating people about it, you know?
Well, and educating himself. I mean, one of the reasons, I mean, he's considered to be, you know, one of the world's greatest guitar players, and that when he was very young, I mean, there was music in his family. His mother turned him on to jazz and all of that. But that he, you know, he got his first guitar, and then he studied all of these other guys, like Muddy Waters, and he could play all of Chuck Berry's things,
from the
right?
past.
You know, from the past, you know, really focused. I mean, and the other interesting thing is that he went to school, you know, like in the lower grades with Jagger, and then they went different ways. He bumped into him, right, like on the train, and it turned out that they were both so interested in the same thing, and that, you know, Jagger had been following Chuck Berry and all of this, and had the records, and so, you know, he ends up in, you know, in this band with Jagger, and that didn't really work out, and then they started the Rolling Stones, and I mean, they've been together since 1962, except for a period where they kind of broke apart, you know.
Right.
I guess there really was an ongoing kind of tension between Jagger and Richards about who was really in charge and who was really kind of the best, and I guess Jagger was sort of possessive. I mean, Keith talks about that Mick really didn't want him to have any other friends but him.
Well, do they have, I think they have companionships in their chart. I can't remember Jagger's chart.
I don't remember Jagger's chart, but
I think they might have the prodigal, you know, they might have two companionships.
Well, whatever. I mean, you know, they definitely are like an old married couple in that sense, you know, having been together all of these years, breaking up for a period of time, doing their own thing. Keith's, you know, solo album was much, you know, more well received than Jagger's, and I think this is part of the reason they came back together, put it back together, and continued to play together.
Well, look at Keith, he's got talent, you know. Three activations of the 16th gate.
He has skills, he doesn't have talent,
he's got skills.
That's
and
right.
And that one, the 16th gate third line, you know, it's timing to maintain the rhythm. What is he, a bass player or lead guitar?
He's a lead guitar, and he's a singer, too. I mean, you know, he sang for the Queen when he was a little boy. I mean, you know, this whole 3-6 process,
right,
of, you know, he's been tried 5 times on drug-related charges, you know, in the first 30 years of his life, right?
Right.
You know.
No, I think probably he'd be a little cautious about speaking or singing, you know, with 4 activations of that 12. I think 12-5 is caution. You know, just a reticence, I would call it. And
well, look at how powerful that throat of his is. And he's a single definition, you know. I mean, in the channel of mutation, which is, I think, the other interesting thing, that here he is, you know, off the roof at this time in his life where he's kind of contemplating, you know, definitely closer to the end, and why many met the end and he didn't, and all of that, you know, coming out at this time.
Yeah. No.
In his life.
No.
Yeah.
I know. You know, that 18th gate, challenging authority, you know, the ability to challenge authority and things like that. But Openhead Ajna, very intellectual, really.
Oh,
I think
he's an avid reader, and he owns an extensive library. No surprise, right? Well, especially with the 11th gate, when you consider he's a single definition, right? And here's the 11th three that's sitting up there in this, you know, open Ajna, you know, kind of coming and going. The ideas coming and going, you know, not necessarily consistent.
Oh, yeah, ideas. You know, and stimulated by ideas and being stimulated by, and the past, you know. You think, well, perfect guy to write the history of the Rolling Stones or just his own life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a trip, because he encompasses this whole era, 1960 to the present.
That's what I mean. He's really a folk hero, you know, for all of us baby boomers, right? I mean, here he lived to tell about it. Right. And, you know, his story could be our story.
We'll
right?
have to get this.
Yeah, we should get this book and read it. I mean, the excerpts in the Rolling Stone, and it's very interesting. I mean, you know, what a life, bigger than life, bigger than life. And here he is telling us about it. And like I say, I think, you know, so many of us can really relate to his story, of course.
Right. Well, Teresa, as usual, just not enough time.
Nope.
But say goodnight, Teresa.
Goodnight, Teresa.